Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode number 2 of Terrace Talk. As we look ahead to Norwich City's second game back in the Championship, they're, of course, hosting Preston North End at Carrow Road this weekend. Still behind closed doors, but that doesn't mean we can't get some fans' perspective on the goings-on at both clubs. Joined by Sam Langan, Norwich City fan, and joined by Ryan Briley as well, who's a Preston North End fan and also a professional rugby player for Hull, KR and Scotland International. So Ryan, before we get started in terms of football chat, I thought I'd come to you first. Just talk to us a little bit about the procedures in rugby, because there's been a lot of focus on football and football's return. Maybe I'm not a massive rugby fan, I'll get that out there at the start. But I haven't heard as much about rugby. I mean, are you guys still in like the bubbles and stuff that we're seeing in football and other professional sports?
Yeah, mate. So it kind of pretty much transpired with what all the other sports are doing. So we get tested once, twice a week. And if you have any symptoms, obviously you can't come into training, all that kind of stuff. You have to kind of stay in your own houses. You're not allowed to mix with the public, not allowed to go out with family for meals and stuff. It's just a bit of a nightmare. You can't go to any like public gyms or swimming pools or anything like that. So it's not great, but I think we just got to do what we can to kind of get the season over the line. It's been a tough kind of slog to get it back started. So it's just mad. It's like each week there'll be a game cancelled in terms of people not managing to get the fixture completed. So the fixtures change every week, and literally even before the day, fixtures will change. So it's I think everyone just on board at the moment, just trying to do everything we can to get the season completed. I don't think there's long left. I think there's only like 7-8 games left. So. But yeah, far from ideal, but it just has to be done. I think it's been a strange experience having no fans there, and the sooner we can get that back, the better, really.
Yeah, and obviously you're a professional sportsman, so it seems right to ask you about behind closed doors and playing behind closed doors, because that's something as a rugby player you've had to experience. How have you found that? I know you've got a slight injury at the moment, but how have you found playing behind closed doors? Has it changed your mentality as a player? Has it changed perhaps what the game is like as an experience?
Yeah, I can't stand it. I know speaking to a couple of players and footballers themselves, it's just not the same. And I think there's certain players who kind of thrive off the pressure and thrive off the enthusiasm the fans bring and the atmosphere. And I certainly am one of them. It's kind of throwback to like the amateur days where you kind of play in front of nobody. So I think it has changed the dynamic of the game. I think players who kind of not play on the edge but kind of play with that enthusiasm and need that kind of adrenaline rush to kind of perform, it certainly dampened that part of the game. So you especially in rugby, you've seen a certainly different dynamic in terms of enthusiasm and intensity and pressure as well. So if you in normal circumstances would you have thrown that pass? Probably not, but then now there's no fans there and no pressure, you're probably more willing to throw it and knowing you're not going to get booed off or anything like that. So, no, it's been difficult. It's been difficult. And like I said earlier, I think the sooner the return of fans to stadiums will be better for everybody. And as a fan, like, obviously, as you know, a big Preston fan, and watching the games during the lockdown and obviously after the lockdown and behind closed doors, it just wasn't the same. I'm sure you guys agree. It's football's not really the same sport without the fans.
That seems like a brilliant time to bring Sam in. Sam, as a Norwich fan, how have you found this period? Because it's been a lot of fans have found it incredibly difficult not being able to attend games. It is such a source of escapism, football. How have you sort of viewed this period? Is it something that is still quite difficult for you? Are you as emotionally invested in the games?
Yeah, I think I'm still as emotionally invested. I think, obviously, no matter like how you watch the game, still going to be like pretty addicted, and yeah, you're going to be like supporting the team no matter how you view it. But yeah, I mean, I'm not a season ticket holder. I'll probably get to about one in three games. That's home and away. I'm London based, so I don't know who gets them. And I think watching them just on the screen, I guess you do lose that connection a little bit. There's just nothing like the match day experience. So yeah, it's been strange. And I think when we all are allowed back in stadiums, it's just going to make it so much more easier, and we are going to have that connection again.
Well, this is it from the EFL on Wednesday morning. Was this statement saying that they do hope that actually some EFL games will be allowed to have pilots. Ryan, let's get your perspective on this as a professional sportsman. How much will even getting 1,000, 2,000 fans back into stadiums, how will that really improve, I guess, the spectacle, but equally for players and for people within the game? How beneficial will that be to getting what you said there in terms of that dynamic that's been lost? How important will it be to getting that back, do you think?
Oh, yeah, massive. I think I'm presuming out of that 1,000, 2,000, it potentially could be allowed back into the stadium. A few of them will be family members as well. So, like your family, you've not been able to come watch you play. You'll also see daughters, sons, mum and dads. Also, them being allowed into the game is into the stadium is massive. And I think that's where you kind of get your extra 5, 10% from. And especially as a player, that's kind of, especially why I play, obviously trying to make my family proud. And that'd be a massive thing for me, especially. So, but again, like I say, 1,000, 2,000 people back in the stadium. Not that it's going to be a racket and it's going to be a massive atmosphere change, but there will be some noise there. And like I said to you earlier, in terms of refereeing decisions, there will be a roar when someone goes down in a penalty box, a handball or anything like that. There will be a change of environment and atmosphere. So me personally, I think that will change the dynamic in terms of refereeing decisions, where at the moment there's no pressure on them to make any sort of decision. And it's natural. It's just a natural reaction and thing to do when there is noise and things happen on the back of things happening in the game. So, yeah, even if I was playing away from home, I'd rather be playing in front of crowds than not doing so. If you ask any player, would they rather play in front of 2,000 or none? Everyone would have the same answer. So we're looking forward to it. Hopefully it's sooner or later.
I mean, we've spoken about how much you don't like playing behind closed doors. I wonder if referees have perhaps been the one winners of behind closed doors football. It must be quite nice for them not to hear their name put into certain chants, maybe. Sam, let's reflect on Norwich then. They, of course, kick-started their season last week with a 1-0 win against Huddersfield. What did you make of the performance? Because it wasn't overly convincing, but it was a win. And given that they were, 12-game losing streak in all competitions, that was the main thing for a lot of fans.
Yeah, it was okay. And there were some bright moments from the whole team. But I think similar to Luton in the Cup the week before, in the first half, probably produced the best football. And the second half was like a little less fluid in terms of possession. But I think we did limit Huddersfield to very little. We had an XG of about 1.5, but I guess most of that was made up by the goal and the other chance that Ida had when Pookie nearly set him up again. But we didn't really consistently create goal-scoring chances over the whole game. So, yeah, definitely much to be improved, but it was still just a massive relief to get a win.
I think at this stage of the season, it's important that perhaps we make comments rather than conclusions and sort of look for any trends. I mean, it's very difficult to take anything like it is in pre-season out of the first game of the season. But was there anything that you saw from that performance that either particularly impressed you or particularly concerned you?
I think it was mainly like the individual performances rather than the like collective performance of the team, really, because I think players like Cantwell, Aarons played really, really well. Cantwell was my man of the match. The way that he's able to keep the ball so well and bring other players into play was really, really good. I thought the link-up he had with Dow in the first half was also really good. They did sort of get into the same positions, which probably wasn't very good for the attacking phase, but they still managed to link up really well, and I think I saw a little bit of a relationship going on there, so that was really strong for me. I guess, yeah, it's just trying to be able to play like consistent or fart ball like over the course of 90 minutes, really. That's something that we haven't seen in the first two games. I mean, against Luton in the Cup, I guess it was more of a B-side, so we're probably not going to see that same 11 play together again But yeah, I think going into the game against Preston on the weekend, it'd be good to have, like, yeah, more consistent phases of good possession.
I think my colleague Paddy Davitt summed it up quite nicely on Twitter, where he said not pretty but pretty effective in terms of the win. And it kind of felt to me, certainly given everything that had gone before, it's certainly the expectation that a lot of people have given them in pre-season, that actually a win was as important for perhaps the PR and getting the fans back on side than it was maybe the performance.
Yeah, and I think it will give them a massive boost, and you hope, because they haven't played well but got that 3 points, that they will then got to get into rhythm over the next few games. I also think it was huge to get a clean sheet, because that's the first clean sheet since February. And I think for someone like Christoph Zimmern, Ben Godfrey, Tim Krul, and Aaron, it's not to play in within a back four and not get a clean sheet for such a long time. It's a real boost. I mean, again, Huddersfield weren't like, they didn't really create much at all. And even when they had corners, I mean, obviously our big weakness is set pieces into the box, and they wanted to play it short. And so, I mean, they really played into our hands in that way. But yeah, I think that 3 points should give them a boost.
And on the other end of the spectrum, Ryan is your boys, Preston North End. They obviously lost their first game against Swansea. How did you view that? Because as I said, it's important that perhaps we don't look maybe for conclusions or overarching trends and maybe look at the performance as a single entity. What did you make? Were you disappointed with the result? Were there some pleasing elements to it?
I think the most frustrating thing for Preston fans was it was kind of a continuation from the lockdown, and just like a bit of a methodical and slow type of approach to the game. And I think teams have, I wouldn't say sussed us out, because again, I'm not a footballing guru, but it feels as if teams are cancelling us out by sitting off us a little bit and just letting us have the ball, because at the moment we're struggling to find the creativity to kind of find a killer pass in the final third to kind of score a goal. Even from the weekend, I think we had like 64-65% possession of the ball. But there's not one chance where we could have said, oh, you should have scored, or we should have scored. Like, there was no clear-cut chance for us. And also, we ended up losing the game 1-0 on the back of their only chance. So that's kind of the most frustrating thing, is we're not struggling in terms of the game. We're just struggling to score goals and to create clear-cut chances. And I think even, like, crosses into the box, just our delivery is poor. And it was, again, it's more of a continuation from before the season finished, just lacking that cutting edge. And I think we kind of suit the teams what are going to come on to us a little bit, to kind of leave us a bit of room in terms of transitions and that kind of stuff. Because if we have the most of the ball, we seem to struggle in breaking teams down. And unfortunately, that's probably the most frustrating thing.
And of course, you did get your season off with a win in the cup. At least you beat Derby County last night as we were recording this on Wednesday, 2-1. I think it was a late winner, wasn't it? A late penalty, even though Derby had a man sent off. Is that, again, the confidence booster that maybe not just the team, but the whole club needs? Because it feels like there's been we'll come on to this in greater detail in a bit, but it kind of feels like there's a little bit of a grey cloud over Deepdale at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I think the club was probably in a no-win situation last night. I think in terms of the result, obviously it's helped, but I don't think it kind of stems the flow of the negativity, I suppose. I think, obviously, I think there's bigger issues going on behind closed doors. And as players, they can all control what's kind of put in front of them. And to come away with a win is positive. And by all accounts, obviously, I only managed to see the second half, but by all accounts, the performance was a lot better. Obviously, there were some fresh bodies in there from Saturday. So, yeah, it's an improvement. It's an improvement, but we're never gonna win the cup, are we? So I think it's just a case of, especially at the moment, it kind of felt like a bit of a pre-season type game. So more than happy with the win, but I don't think it just more masks the issues at the moment and delays them for even further. So I think we're in trouble this weekend against you guys, but it'd be totally like Preston to get a result, wouldn't it? Like, just totally go against the odds, but Now that's probably what kills you, really. It's the hope that kills you, isn't it? So, yeah, it's interesting times for sure.
I know you've said that the cup isn't a priority, but who have you guys got in the next round? You know,
it's Brighton or Portsmouth. So whoever wins that,
so potentially a Premier League title for you. And I think we got Ryan. Oh, there we go. You seem to be back. There we go. This is the problem, isn't it? Doing these things over technology, you lose connection a bit. And I've just been sent a link to say that the game on Saturday at Carrow Road will have fans. So there you go. Norwich City will be a club who are going to have a pilot on Saturday. It looks like. I'll just try and get details of that. But whilst I do that, Sam, what sort of impact do you think that will give Norwich City's performance to have? I mean, we spoke about it briefly there, but now it's confirmed that there will be up to 1,000 fans at Carrow Road. What sort of impact could that have to Norwich City's performance, do you think?
Oh, yeah, I think it'll, like, even if it's a very sort of marginal positive difference, I think, yeah, that'll still really, really help the players. It must have been so weird after all these months not to play, like, in front of fans. And, yeah, I mean, obviously the 1,000 people there are all going to be supporting Norwich. So, yeah, as Ryan alluded to earlier, they're going to be able to put pressure on, on the referee. They're going to be able to support the players. So, yeah, I think it's going to be, like, a huge, huge difference.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be interesting to see what that does for the performance. I'll just read the statement here. It says up to 1,000 fans will be allowed to attend 10 different EFL games this weekend as part of the government's crowd pilots. The news comes as discussions between the EFL and the government about return for more supporters from October the 1st continue. The Championship games that have been confirmed, Luton against Derby, Middlesbrough against Bournemouth and Norwich against Preston. So only three games in the Championship, some more in League One and League Two. Right, let's push away from that then. Let's talk about Norwich as a whole. It's been an interesting week. We obviously seen Jamal Lewis depart so far in this window, and there's been a lot of noise surrounding Emi Buendia and an interview that he's done this week. What do you make of that with your fans hat on? Obviously, he's available for selection in this game. We obviously understand that there's certainly from his perspective no push for a move, and it seems to have split opinion, this kind of interview that he's done, and it kind of feels like some fans are seeing it as a come and get me plea to Premier League clubs, and other are perhaps seeing it as him saying, well, the situation is kind of unchanged. If someone comes in for me, I'd like to be a Premier League player, but if not, then my head is with Norwich. What, I guess it's kind of polarising to say which camp are you in, but how did you view that interview, I guess, and how do you think he does fit into Norwich City's side if he does come back in? Because you said there about Dowell and Cantwell perhaps forming a chemistry. Do you pluck one of those out, do you think?
I think it's a completely non-story for me. I read it first thing in the morning and I just didn't think anything of it, and I was really surprised to see that it got a bit of a negative reaction. I mean, player who's too good for the Championship might move, but if he doesn't, no, it's just absolutely, it's a complete non-story, really. If anything, I think I'm kind of relieved when Deere has come out and said that he would, like, definitely give his all during 2021 season, really. I mean, yeah, I think I would play him whether he's on the verge of a move or whether there's been no offers at all, really. I guess, obviously, that's then a conversation about who you replace him with, whether he comes in for Hernandez, Cantwell or Dowell. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, it didn't bother me the slightest. I think I guess he was slightly inconsistent in parts last season, but in terms of his metrics, I mean, his dribbling and the chances that he created, it's ridiculous that he was playing in the worst side in the league and he was still able to do that. So yeah, I think I'm not sure when it will happen. It might not happen this transfer window, but if we can keep him for until at least January, that will just be absolutely amazing.
We are in a transfer window, so of course these sort of questions arise, and we're going to come to Ryan in a moment about Preston's, I don't know if I described them as struggles, but certainly difficulties perhaps with speculation. But in terms of those young players, they've all received a bit of speculation over this summer, some more than others. As a fan, as we sit here with a few more weeks to go, of course it finishes in October, doesn't it, transfer window fully in terms of domestic deals. How do you see it going? And I guess which player would you be most disappointed to lose from a Norwich City perspective?
Yeah, I was thinking about this, really. Well, exactly. exactly that question: who would I most disappoint to see go? And it's really difficult to answer, because actually, I think all the Lyon players that we talk of are huge assets. And I think I was sort of preparing myself when we were definitely going to get relegated that we might not be able to keep any of them. I mean, so at the moment, going into the new season, we've only lost Jamal Lewis. Is actually pretty good going, really. I don't know whether that's more to do with the transfer window in general, because there's less money around. But I think all those players could play in the top flight. Obviously, Buendia, yeah, I'd be massively disappointed to go. I mean, even players like Ben Godfrey, I mean, I thought he had a really promising game on Saturday when he was stepping out of the ball and sort of breaking into that midfield line. That looked really good. That's something that I haven't seen him do. I definitely didn't really see him do that during lockdown. And even Aarons as well. Like, he's so good going. Well, he's definitely like better defensively. But even from like an attacking point of view, I saw him kind of beat the left back or the left winger of Huddersfield a lot more. So, yeah, I mean, they'd all be huge misses, I guess. But yeah, I guess for me, Buendia is a very, very special player. If there's one that I'd wanted to stay, at least for this season, it would be him.
Interesting. And Ryan, we'll bring you in now and just talk us through a little bit about certainly the week Preston have had, but more the transfer window that Preston have had. I saw earlier in the week there was a club statement. I think the owner released it, didn't he, in terms of speculation surrounding some of their players and saying that if the club don't pay the fee that we want for players, then they're not going to leave. How much? I maybe you're used to it as a Preston fan, like a lot of Norwich fans will be when they have some talent and what that's like getting linked away. But as a fan, it must be pretty horrible, and I guess your heart must sink every window when you see perhaps some of your best players linked moves away.
Yeah, I think the most frustrating thing for us is a lot of fans have seen it kind of coming, because there's a lot of players who were out of contract. Obviously, this summer coming, so 2021. So we've kind of seen this kind of tornado building. It's kind of erupting at the moment. We had a really good start at the beginning of last season, and there was kind of calls then for players to be tied down and understanding how good they were playing and rewarding. And just because our stock was quite high and I think was top of the league
Hello. I think we've got Ryan back now. There we go, Ryan. Sorry.
Someone was trying to ring me, but sorry. I think it's just been more frustrating, the fact that it's been a build-up of frustration. From a player's point of view, I get it, and I get it every time. And this is what it's kind of hard to kind of explain to Preston fans, that players don't love the club as much as we do, and likewise yourselves, players don't love the club as much as fans do. And what the problem with Preston, obviously, we have, I think, the fourth lowest wage budget in the competition. When teams are going to come in, they're not going to increase your wages by a grand a week. We're talking double figures, 10, 20 grand a week. Like, it's the difference between potentially having to work again and potentially having to not when you finish playing. Like, that's the difference we're talking about. And even if we just touch on the Daniel Johnson thing, like, last season, at the start of the season, before he started playing well, I think Wigan Athletic came in for him on loan, and the club said, we don't want to loan him out, but we're willing to sell him. And obviously, Wigan weren't willing to buy him at that point, because I wouldn't say he was out of favour, but he wasn't certainly indispensable to the club like he is now. But and so we're talking 12 months ago. So this was a player who was actually told he could leave as long as the right fee comes in, because he wasn't part of the plans. So now in 12 months' time, he's played due to injury, a couple of injuries, and managed to play and play really well and become the team's best player, one player of the season. Now we want him to sign a new contract. It's like, it doesn't work like that. Like, he'll remember 12 months ago, I think every goal he scored last season, he celebrated by putting his fingers to his ear. Like, because he knows all the stuff was being spoke about him, not in a positive way. So players remember that stuff. So I'm sure his agent will be going to tell him, hang on a minute, 12 months ago, you tried to get rid of me. and now you want me to sign a new contract. So it just doesn't work. And I think the cuts or range, I think they might have put coming 2.5 million for a player we sign for 50 grand, that the ownership see obviously a £2 million plus profit for a guy who's going to leave free at the end of the year. So it's easy for clubs to, it's easy for fans to come and say, well, just offer him a new contract and just and give him more money. But we're talking, you're never going to be able to match Rangers' money anyway, because he's been on such, I say low money, we're talking footballers' wages here, aren't we? But we're talking low money in terms of what he was worth because of what happened 12 months ago. So you didn't want to extend his contract then, you didn't want to give him a pay rise then. So the amount of money you have to compete with Rangers is just way out the pipe. You're never going to be able to do it. So the club is in a no-win situation, but it's their own fault because 12 months ago they could have tied him down and they would have never had this problem. And that goes for a lot of the players like Ben Davies, Ben Pearson, Alan Brown. Like when things haven't been going so well, they've not been off the contracts or contracts extension. But now if they play well, a few teams come in, they want to start offering contract extensions. And players are not stupid. They know it's about flavour of the month for them. And if they can triple, quadruple the wages by one move, they're going to do it. As simple as that.
And you mentioned there in terms of the competition for wages. I guess if Preston don't have those wages to spend on new talent, then they're certainly not going to be able to match some of the offers that are coming. Rangers, for example, that you mentioned there, they're certainly not going to be able to compete with a club the size of that financially to retain players.
And I read a good article before, actually. It kind of hit the nail on the head. They were talking about to match Daniel Johnson's offer from Rangers. So, again, allegedly, reportedly, he'd been offered 20 grand a week for 4 years. So it ends up around 2 million plus. So it'd be like Preston now signing a player for 2 million and paying them 10 grand a week for 4 years. Like we haven't beat our transfer record since David Healy, which is, I was going to say 15 plus years ago, which was 1.2 million back then. So there's no way Preston are going to spend that type of money so to match Rangers. So it becomes, because we won't break our wage budget, unfortunately, this is what's going to happen. And until we break the wage, and I would rather do what kind of Brentford's model is. 12 months ago, you know Daniel Johnson's capabilities. So 12 months ago, when he had 2 years left on his contract, why don't you extend his contract and give him really, really good money? Because you're going to be able to sell him anyway. So we're always going to sell players. Preston, we're never going to be top of the tree. So we're always going to have to sell players. So why don't you protect your asset by giving him the contract then? Ben Pearson, Ben Davies, the same now, who were in trouble of losing. Rather than run it down and gamble and wait till there's 12 months left, look after your top prospects now. Like your big four, look after them now. So I'm talking 12 months ago, where they can actually go, oh, there's a bit of security there, a bit of three-year, four-year contracts. And that way you protect your assets by giving more money, but you also demand IFE. Just like a quick tip on obviously Ben Davies, the club value Ben Davies around 7 to 10 million. But will he be on a 7 to 10 million pound worth player's salary? He'll be nowhere near it. So you can't have the best of both worlds. You can't be demanding 7 million for him when his value, the actual salary you give him, is worth 800 grand to a million. You can't have it both ways. So if you value him at that, pay him that. But they never will. So that's why Preston will always be on the back foot, because their players will always be worth more than the club are willing to pay them, and that's why they'll always lose them.
That's an interesting point, Sam, that we've just heard from Ryan. That's something that Norwich City have done very well. If you look at Emi Buendia, Todd Cantwell, maybe Cantwell is an exception, but Godfrey, certainly Aarons, three players that are on long-term deals. It seems like they've protected their assets maybe a lot better than Preston have.
Yeah, I mean, we know that Stuart Webber's done a really good job, not with just the recruitment, but yeah, tying these players down to big contracts. I mean, obviously, because of the coronavirus and the transfer market has kind of changed in terms of fees. So we were talking about getting, 30 million for maybe Aarons or Lewis, and They've kind of decided to take an offer that will build up to 20 million for Lewis in the end. But I don't know. We've seen like players like Ollie Watkins go for about 30 million window. So I still think Norwich could hope for a little bit more for Emi Buendia.
Right, let's turn our attentions to this week's game then. Sam, I don't know how much of Preston you've watched. I'm going to ask Ryan the same question as well, so this is going to be interesting. Sam, what are you expecting from Preston this weekend? Obviously, a manager that Norwich City know in Alex Neil, someone who was at the club and perhaps is, despite how it ended at the club, remembered quite fondly, dare I say, for the playoff final and that day at Wembley that he gave to Norwich City fans. But How do you see him bringing his Preston team to Carrow Road and setting up?
Well, I think they're just a really intense and solid side, Preston. I remember when, I think it was in 18-19, I think we'd just beaten Ipswich in the derby. We went to Preston and I think we lost 3-1. And I just remember how they just gave us any time on the ball. They broke down all our attacks. And Alex Neil really did a number on Farker there because there was just no way we could build up from the back because of how reactively good Preston were. I mean, this is a side that only finished 4 points off the playoffs last season. They've got loads of really good championship players that Ryan's already mentioned. I mean, yeah, Daniel Johnson was their like top scorer last season, but Thomas Barkhausen as well. He's been playing for Preston for a couple of seasons and yeah, always looked, I think they started with Jaden Stockley, I think it was maybe in the league game. And he's just, again, like a really difficult striker to play against. He's just, really good at winning duels, brings other players into the game. So, yeah, I think it'll be a really intense one. And, yeah, just on Alex Neil, I mean, he's still like a massive hero of mine and I think a club legend. I can't really believe that he's actually still quite divisive amongst certain members of the fan base because this is someone that like, produced like my and other fans' best memory of being an Norwich fan in 2015 when obviously we beat Ipswich in the playoff semi-finals, won at Wembley against Middlesbrough, and it didn't go well in 2016-17, but it wasn't a complete disaster that some people make out that it was. And yeah, I think he had to contend with a lot of egos, to be honest. And it's so difficult that pressure when you're a relegated club that comes down to the championship. I just think it's much harder to get going the second time round, and this is something that Farker could find out later in the season.
Yeah, I think Daniel Farker might benefit from offering Alex Neil into his office for maybe a drink or two after the game and picking his brains a little bit. Ryan, talk to us a little bit about Alex Neil. He's been at Preston for a while now, and he seems to have sort of overseen a period of steady progression. I think that's fair to say. I mean, you've said about the budgets. It seems like he's overperformed, really, given perhaps the squad at his disposal. How is he viewed amongst Preston fans? Is he someone that is still well liked? Because I know when managers are in their post for a little while, some people can begin to perhaps see change on the horizon or wish for change on the horizon.
I think if you ask the most sensible fans, I think they'll tell you they really like him and he's really good for this club. I'll always back that up. I think when I got to watch Preston games, for the main part, for 95% of it, I actually enjoy watching the games as well. So, and obviously, understandably, as fans, obviously, of course, we want to support our team and we enjoy supporting our team. But I'm presuming you guys can relate. If you was going to a game where the football wasn't great, you can't really enjoy it. Whereas I think Preston fans are quite lucky in the fact that they do try and play an attractive brand of football. Like yourselves, I think you do try and play an attractive brand of football, which obviously helps. And I think there'd be nothing worse than going to a game where you want your team to win, but it's absolutely dreadful to watch. And for them, you might scab a 1-0 win, but you've just wasted 90 minutes of your life watching some drab. So I think, again, for the main part, the most sensible fans will tell you what an unbelievable job he's doing. Even the season before, we should be nowhere near like challenging the top teams. And I think last season, I think our best performances of the season was against Leeds. I think we drew, obviously, one all both occasions. And there was our best performances against, obviously, the best team in the competition. And I think we seem to do well against the better opposition. And like I said earlier, because better opposition possession, they're going to have the ball and come on to us. I think we're a little bit better. I think we like to kind of high press and nick the ball in dangerous areas and kind of transition really well. It's probably the lesser team we kind of struggle a little bit more in terms of, because we have more of the ball having to try and break them down. I don't think we've got, I just mentioned like Tom Barkhuizen, like he likes to be in transition and counter attack, get behind teams, and he's rapid. He can hurt teams, especially on the break. Whereas if teams are sitting off and there's not a lot of room, he struggles to kind of affect the game. Again, I'm talking like a football manager, and I'm certainly not. But I think that's probably from the naked eye. That's what I kind of look. But again, I'm really happy with him. I think any season where Preston finish in the top half, battling against the wage budgets, what we do in terms of the top teams is a massive achievement. And like I said earlier, certain Preston fans wouldn't be happy with that. They think we've got to give them right to win the league, and it's that simple. But it's not. Like we base our team on working hard and trying to out-enthuse other teams. And I think the Championship's a bit of a strange one. I think you spoke earlier about the 3-1 defeat against Preston a couple of seasons back, and I remember being at the game and I thinking, like, I remember leaving the game, I didn't understand how we'd won, because Norwich was like far and away the most impressive team to come to Deepdale that year. And then you think you're walking off the same one. We've won 3-1, and I have no idea how. Like, I think a lot of this league is how clinical you are, and if your chances go in the back of the net or not. And I know it sounds really stupid, that, but a team can have all the ball like yourselves did against Preston, and I think Pukki had just had an off night. I think he hit the post and just nothing really kind of fell for him. And in other games, everything fell for him. He's got 4 goals, so I think it really is a tough league in terms of being clinical. And you can kind of, especially early on in the year, we had a good conversion rate in terms of like even like penalties and stuff. And I think they can change your season and probably mislead a little bit as well. But I think Norwich again, Wilson, will be up there at the end of the season, and for me, I think they'll be the best team in the competition again.
That's a statement that Norwich City fans will like to hear. Before we sort of get your score predictions and draw this to a close, I want to ask you both about two players in particular, both with sort of a foot in both camps, I guess. The first one being Jordan Hughgill, who obviously signed for Norwich in the summer. It seems like a good time to bring Sam in to sort of talk about him. I don't know if you watched the Luton game, Sam, so maybe you can tell me if you did, but what did you make of Jordan Hughgill in that game? Because it kind of felt a little bit like they couldn't really forge a connection between the style of player that he is, and by his own admission, he's a bit of a battering ram to perhaps how Norwich City want to play. And then I'll come to Ryan on perhaps what he was like in that Preston team. But what do you make of Jordan Hughgill so far? Where do you see him fitting into the dynamic of the side?
Yeah, I did watch the Luton game, and I completely agree with your observation that he just did struggle to get into the game. I don't think he had many touches, and there were very few completed passes between himself and Marco Stieperman. So, yeah, there definitely wasn't any chemistry there, but I don't think Hughgill is going to be a player that starts many games, to be honest. I think when Norwich are in difficult circumstances in the game, maybe they're losing or maybe they're looking for a goal, and they're not creative anything through the final third, I think they'll just look to bring Hughgill on to be more direct, really. I also think maybe off the ball, he's still got, like, he needs a bit of help, or, you know, Farke needs to work with him on that. Not only in terms of his movement, I guess he isn't going to, like, as a striker who plays with his back to goal, he's not going to run in behind very often. But I remember seeing against Luton when he went to press the goalkeeper, and actually this was at a time when Norwich's midfield had dropped back a bit. So he went to press the keeper, and then they were he was able to pass to the side, to the right back. There was no other Norwich player pressing, so he was completely out of the game. So that kind of showed me that actually, even when Norwich are out of possession, he still probably isn't up to speed a little bit of that, what Farke wants them to do in terms of the high press. So yeah, there are a few things. I mean, he just seems to do really well for Preston, and I think he could be someone that, you know, that you bring on and is key. You sort of look at the Jordan Rhodes factor that we had in 18-19 and how he was able to come on late in games and hold the ball up. And even, I think there was a game against West Brom where he scored. And so, yeah, and that was when Pukki was injured. So I think there will be opportunities for him. But, yeah, still very early in his Norwich City career.
Ryan, just very briefly talk to us about Jordan Hugill from your perspective. What can Norwich fans expect from him, I guess? Because we were speaking a bit about this off record, I guess, and you said that he's someone who does work incredibly hard, but maybe hasn't got the technical capabilities that perhaps Norwich might like.
I think Sam nailed it. I think from the outside looking at, I think he will be a bit of a bit part player for you. And especially, like I said earlier, when he was kind of being quoted around and being bantered around the leagues about, say, a £10 million striker when West Ham bought him, I think you could have asked the most biased Preston fan and he wouldn't have told you that he was worth that. And I mean, fair play to the club and fair play to him for getting the move done and obviously achieve his dreams. But I think from my knowledge, and again, like I said, I'm not a football guru, but I think he does lack the technical ability. He's not someone you're going to trust one-on-one keeper to beat to win you a game. Like, I don't think he's that type of person. I think, especially for you guys and where you're going to be in terms of the season, I think he is one of them players who can come on with 15, 20 minutes to go, just to change things. You might go a little bit more direct if your plan A is not working, and he might nick you a goal. He might nick you 7 to 10 goals for the year. But I don't think he'll be your out and out first choice. And again, just like Ossie Fikoshu, like I said earlier, I think there'll be some games, especially away from home, where you kind of want to get a bit of a grip of the game. And I think like Sam nailed it before. Like, what I found with Jordan is, even though he's strong and he can bully defenders and he can win the ball, he struggles to kind of get people around him. And I don't know whether that's down to him being fighting at the wrong time, pressing at the wrong time, or the players not reacting to him. I know a lot of time at Preston, we play like a 4-2, kind of 3-1. So he was like on his own, isolated with his wingers not really around him. So even when he was winning balls and like holding the ball up, there wasn't really enough going on around him. And again, that I'm talking football terms here, but that might not be part of his fault and his problem. But I believe he is one player for you guys who probably won't play a lot in terms of starting games, but I think he will. It's hard to kind of, and I'm probably contradicting myself, I think he will be a really important player for you in terms of getting them results for you when you're probably not playing at your best, and it can kind of come on and win you a game in terms of slowing a game down, winning a free kick, get you out of trouble, and like game management type of stuff. I think he's probably the best suited for that role.
And of course, Declan Rudd coming back to Carrow Road as well, former Norwich City Academy graduate. I think he's had a slight injury, but he did feature last night, so I'm sure it'd be good to see Declan back at Carrow Road. Just before I let you gents go, it's of course got to, like we do every week, get your score predictions. So we'll start with Sam. Sam, first and foremost, again, score prediction, but how do you see this game panning out as a spectacle?
I think personally it'll be a really tight game. I think after the performance I saw last week against Huddersfield, the fact that we weren't very fluid, I don't think suddenly we're going to stop even playing like the fart ball. In 2018-19, you know, we aren't going to see like a 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10 team performance. But hopefully it will be gradually improved and we maybe like control the game a little bit more with possession. But as I said earlier, like Preston seem like such a good side off the ball in terms of, you know, breaking Norwich down and getting tackles in. So, yeah, I mean, I think it will be a tight game because of that. And yeah, I'm probably only one goal, maybe even like 2-1. I remember there was a game in 2018-19, the home one at Carrow Road, where we didn't play very well, and I think that was Pookie's first goal for the club. I think maybe Mary of Rancher scored the other one, but that was like a really, in terms of quality, that wasn't good at all from either side. So Preston picked up a little bit in the week. They obviously got that win. So yeah, I think maybe they'll be a bit more confident, and yeah, really a really tight 2-1, I think.
Interesting. Ryan, final word goes to you. How do you see it going from a Preston perspective?
It would be like, it'd be totally Preston authentic to go and get a result, wouldn't it? But for me, I think, obviously, like I said earlier, we seem to perform better against the team who are going to have the ball. I think with the way Norwich play, we'll probably go very high press style, and like what Sam said, probably more to disrupt it than anything. I don't think there'll be any method behind the madness. I think they just try and press and just disrupt, just so, because we're not a team who can allow you guys to have that much of the ball. You've got too much quality. You'll hurt us too much. So I can imagine Ben Pearson following Cantwell around, won't leave his side all day. So I think, again, my head is saying we'll struggle, but I'll let my heart take over, and I think we'll get a 1-1. I think we might get a point.
Brilliant stuff. Sam, Ryan, thank you very much. Ryan, best of luck for the rest of your season. Of course, head to thinking.com for all the latest Norwich City news and analysis. Get your score predictions down in the comments below. Leave a like. Make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel as well. It's going to be an interesting game. It's going to be good to be back at Carrow Road with some fans in the stadium. Of course, pinkin.com for all the details in terms of ticketing and stuff. I don't think the club have quite confirmed that, but when they do, it will be on our website. So make sure you keep it locked to there. Sam, Ryan, thank you very much. Thank you very much for watching. Stay safe, and we'll see you all again very, very soon.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.